We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Owning a small business can be overwhelming. How can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy. Get Constant Contact. There's so many places to reach customers. Email, text messages, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, live events, the list goes on. How are you, as the business owner, expected to own all of those channels? That's where Constant Contact comes in to help. With Constant Contact, you'll reach new audiences, grow your customer list, and communicate more effectively to sell more, raise more, and fast-track growth. I use this to grow my email list, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Gilcast. You are either listening to this on the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast feed or the Roto Grinders Daily Fantasy Football feed. I am Davis Maddock, joined by Nate Noling and Sammy Reed on Monday morning, not a Sunday night. Nate got the blade. He didn't want to do the show. You know, he was too depressed. He looked at Brock Purdy's magnificent face and he said, no, thank you. He instead played Mr. Unlimited. You guys know.
No thanks. I'm going to play a washed up 5'10 quarterback on a terrible team. I got this. And I'm going to stack his ass in cash. This is going to lead
to
riches.
Thing. I didn't just play him. I locked in multiple lineup spots around him. And I thought it was the positive edge.
So again, this does not happen very often. Sammy and I played the exact same team in DraftKings.com NFL DFS cash games. I really, probably in all the years we have done this show, Sammy, I want to say this has happened less than five times. It really does not happen that often.
Yeah. I was, you know, it's 6 a.m. over here and I was telling my wife, she goes, oh, you know, I'm going to go do the podcast. And she goes, who lost the Gilcast? And I'm like, oh yeah, Nate got it. And me and Davis actually played the same team. And she goes, does that happen often? I'm like, nah, not really. And
never.
You know. Nate doesn't lose very often.
Yeah.
Well, there were, this was a very interesting week. So these were the scores. Davis Maddock, Whirling Dervish, 169.36 points. Nate N, 158.14 points. What happened was this week in cash was there was five locks. I don't ever, there are some slates like this. Normally what will happen was there will be a running back lock, a wide receiver lock, and a tight end lock. But this week we had Moss as a lock, Reek as a lock, Rashad White as a lock, Brevin Jordan as a lock, Falcons defense as a lock, and depending on who you talk to, Brock Purdy as a lock. So that's six. That is very.
It was five. Big. I don't think Brock Purdy was a lock, obviously. I also don't think, I mean, CMC, I think, could have been debated, but there were, I mean, most of the top blended optimals didn't actually had CMC.
That's because the top blended optimals don't know ball.
No, it's because Brevin Jordan was being conservatively projected. The top optimals for every site were David and Joku teams. They had yeah. David and Joku as the optimal tight end, which everyone, I mean, even if you don't know ball, you knew not to do that, and you knew to play Brevin Jordan.
But the thesis was right that Joe Flacco can actually throw the ball in a way that Correct. Deshaun Watson couldn't even do. I mean,
well, the weird thing was those top optimal blended optimals faded more as well. So like it was actually a pivot off of more to like a higher priced
to wide Curtis receiver Samuel.
Terry McLaurin.
Yeah. So Curtis Samuel was actually the third most owned wide receiver at 26%. It looks like a lot of people did the Josh Downs combination. A lot of people did Greg Dortch. He was 13%. Some people got into this. I need to know how this happened, but one construction got off of instead of playing the Deontay Johnson, Cortland Sutton tier of guys, they played an expensive second wide receiver with Tyreek because Pittman was owned.
Olave
was owned and Ayuk was owned. So that means about 40% of the teams did not play Sutton or Deontay Johnson and instead played one of these expensive wide receivers. But that necessitated not playing Rashad White. And I apologize to the listeners of the show if you did this. But Jalen Warren, instead of Rashad White, to get to that spot, I mean, that is just dog shit decision-making because Jalen Warren has to run. So I like Jalen Warren. I think he's good.
He's fantastic. He's such a good player. He's so much better than Najee Harris. He is a dog, but you're playing a part-time back on the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's not a recipe for success. You don't do that in cash.
It is the definition of just being a bit too fancy. Honestly, you could say it might even be knowing a bit too much ball, because when you watch Rashad White play, you're never watching Rashad White and being like, oh, dude smashes. Like, dude's so good. But he like actually has the best role outside of maybe McCaffrey in the NFL.
Yeah, if Jalen Warren had his role, Jalen Warren would be over 8K every week.
Yes, no doubt about it.
The Rashad White role. But yeah, Davis is right. I mean, there is a line of like knowing too much ball and not being able to
like
play
literally knowing
players.
Too much ball.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to be able to play bad players that get the opportunity. And that's Rashad White. I mean, this isn't a talent-based bet at all. Anybody who played Rashad White going into like the season from like a best ball standpoint because of talent like needs to take the L. But this opportunity is second to only CMC. I mean, it's crazy.
It is. So this was the team that that Sammy and I played. Brock Purdy at quarterback, Rashad White, Zach Moss, and Christian McCaffrey at running back. Tyreek Hill with Elijah Moore and Deontay Johnson. Brevin Jordan at tight end and the Atlanta Falcons defense. These were the decisions. You had to decide between Russell Wilson and Cortland Sutton or Brock Purdy and Deontay Johnson. You had to decide, if I remember correctly, it was Curtis Samuel, and there was a $3,200 defense that the Colts defense. It was Downs and the Colts defense versus the Falcons defense and Deontay Johnson. Now, I do need this on the record. I think the team that Sammy and I played was good. I don't know if I would say it is 100% optimal. You had to show up with this team. Because it included Deontay Johnson, who's Sammy. I mean, this guy, him getting a touchdown is like unbelievable.
We ran so good.
The luck box off the chart. Deontay Johnson is absolute dog crap. I mean, literally,
he is. He is. You could not be more right about this.
Well, wait a minute, fellas. Wait a minute. Like, let's just relax on the Deontay Johnson slander. The reality is the weather happened in Pittsburgh. The skies opened up. There was a giant delay. And Davis was like, should I swap? Because, you know,
what happened was, is I was actually going to swap with this Deontay Johnson two burger. I looked at it a little bit and there were other guys who were busting at the time. Like we knew, like Dortch had zero when that game was paused. Downs was a bust in the early games.
Had zero too.
Oren had zero. There were a couple. Olave like did fine. Parker had 10. There were busts in there. But the more important thing for our team, Sammy, was that I was going to swap if Russ got another touchdown in the fourth quarter and he blanked the fourth quarter. He actually lost points in the fourth quarter.
He was throwing interceptions, not winning games. He was doing Russell Wilson things.
So I felt like I think Russ got 16 in the end. So I was like, Purdy can beat him pretty easily, right? Purdy can beat him by 5. And then we had the final quarter of the Steelers game left.
Yeah, like the final half. Essentially.
Yeah. So versus Nate's team, which was, I think Nate's was the second most popular team behind ours, I felt pretty good. I did have a 215. Got to give a shout out to Danny Donahue 777. I did swap versus you. You played Nate's team. I thought I'm going to swap in this spot, but I swapped to Debo in that team. So ended up getting that one.
You're mentally weak because this dude sent me a 215 also, and I did not swap. I don't have paper hands like you do. I knew Brock Purdy the GOAT would come through, and he did.
I think at that point, I don't know if a swap was as
optimal. I think it was probably bad.
I mean, obviously, I think Russell Wilson did run bad in that fourth quarter. Like, that could have gone opposite, like, especially Russell Wilson's history. Like, obviously, I don't believe in narrative street, but like, fourth quarter, Russ Wilson is actually like, he does perform in the fourth quarter.
I don't know if you saw the Patriots Super Bowl, Nate, or not, but I think that narrative might be a little debunked.
No, it's pretty accurate. And Deontay Johnson getting there the way he did, I think, like, that team did run hot, but I do think swapping was probably bad because most of the swaps people did, they went on to like Njoku, and Njoku versus Brevin, or they went to a double tight end build. That's what they did, right?
Well, Elijah Moore would have been the guy to swap off of, which is what I did. So I swapped off McCaffrey. And so in that, the swap I ended up doing was I kept Purdy and I kept Rashad White, and I swapped Elijah Moore and McCaffrey to Debo and Kittle because it increased the correlation, and it was direct leverage on McCaffrey, who everyone I would have been trailing to.
I think the other swap was Hurts and Joku over Purdy CMC, right?
The other swap I looked at was getting off of Rashad White, and it was Purdy, Jerome Ford, Debo Puka, which that also would have been.
Yeah, I think Puka did okay if I remember correctly.
It would have been. I mean, that would have been.
Puka has banished Cooper Kupp into the shadow realm. Like, it's really incredible.
It's like, dude, the it's Cooper sad. Kupp thing.
This Cooper Kupp thing.
It's over. It's over. It's over. It's over. And this happens very fast in the NFL, and you need to like grasp onto it and understand it's happening. And it's happened.
I mean, who had a quicker fall off, Cooper Kupp or Michael Thomas? I mean, literally, like, it was, these guys turned to dust so
fast. Well, it was kind of Cooper Kupp because Michael Thomas didn't play for like a year and a half. And then he just came back like a decrepit version of himself. Whereas Cooper Kupp was like, oh yeah, you know, he got hurt last season, but he's good for this season. And then he got hurt in the preseason again. And then he came back and had two great games. It's like Cooper Kupp's back. And then no.
Well, remember, he got hurt again. So yeah. He came back and got hurt again. I mean, this is just what happens when you turn, like, this is what all athletes say. It's not that Cooper Kupp lost his innate ability to be good. It's that his body is betraying him and he can't do it every snap, every play anymore. They just, you see this with like LeBron, I think is like a great example. Some nights LeBron just like doesn't have it. He goes, I mean, he's literally, I believe, the oldest player in the NBA now. And he goes out and sometimes the shot's falling and he's getting to his spots. And like, sometimes it looks like he's wearing fucking chainmail. You know, he can't get there. So this slate, I mean, I guess the thing that there's not anything interesting.
Yeah, there was so much overlap in the slate. I actually think it's less about players that I wanted to talk about and more just get like discussion around like optimal ways to play in this new train environment. I mean, the train team.
Nate wants to justify his rust
it has nothing to do with the individual decisions. It's more like, do I think that playing the train team in double ups is optimal, or is a two cash lineup build the more optimal way to play in today's
playing one team in the double up,
playing one team in head to heads? Because I do think the train team is better in head to heads. Like train team more often than not is going to win over your head to heads. But absolutely, I do think playing this 12% owned train team that you know in double ups is going to be more than 10% owned and duped. I don't think that's sharp. So like, I think doing a double tight end or a double cash team was like a thing a few years ago of like, I split, you know, and I used to always think that was negative EV, but I almost pulled the trigger yesterday of playing the train team in head to heads and playing my team in double ups and 50-50s and three mans. But I do wonder, like, just because it's the overlap is so strong now. If it's even
I just don't play very many double ups.
That's a thing. And Herzig tweeted something about this. He said, listen, on a slate like this, where we anticipate massive duping, play more head to heads, like get out of the double ups and just play more volume in head to heads, because that's where this kind of like really duped optimal is going to perform better. And so that's definitely what I did. I really
only play the double ups to have ownership for swap decisions and for this show, so I can just talk about like who played what. Like I probably get average week, I get between 1,000 and 1,500 in head-to-heads, depending on how many invites I get, and 100-200 bucks in the double ups. I do the massive $50 double up, the massive $25 double up, and then if there are big $5 and $3 ones, I'll do those.
Yeah, and I only play the single entries. Yes, I'm kind correct. Of the same and yes. only play the, like I haven't played a multi-entry double up in seasons, because the average,
they're just not they're especially not profitable towards the back end of the season. Like maybe in like week two when everyone's still super excited in the content, like Nate, I mean, I'm sure you can pull this up in your fucking
I have all my
size of the massive $50 double up in week one versus week 13. My guess is that the total number of entries is down 50% because the appetite is just not there for it.
I was gonna say 20%.
It's more like 20%. Sammy's right. I think it went from paying out 35 to 5,000 to down to like 2,500 this week. So
and then you assume that the players who are not playing anymore are the ones who are losing money, who are not having winning seasons. So you're just the pool is just getting cold into better players who have access to good information.
Yeah. Like, my ROI in double ups is still higher than my ROI in head to heads, but my overall volume in head to heads is 70% of my total cash action compared to 20% for double ups. And then I have a lot in three mans as well. So, I mean, but I do think double ups are still profitable. Those single entry, when there's 5,000, like it's still profitable. Like these things are still profitable.
Yeah, but it's like,
stay the hell out of the multi-entry. Like just do that.
Yeah. You don't want to play against Levitan's cash team 150 times or whatever, or you don't want to play against that. Like my thing is I don't want to play against people who are just running out the establish the run optimal unless I think they don't know how to adjust for blind spots. Like if you send me a 109 or a 215 and I look at your team and I'm like, you just ran the most optimal team, I probably won't play you again the next week, honestly. Like
you're just trading dollars. You're just trading rake.
Right. Like there's roughly a 0% chance that I am going to be stone cold profitable versus someone who's just clicking optimize on the blitz or ETR or whatever every single week. Like
if you send me a head to head and you played Russ Wilson this week, buddy, let's run it back.
Yeah. I mean, I do. I guess that's like the one interesting decision that we can talk about. Like I didn't like Russell Wilson because he's got no ceiling. He's got a maximum ceiling. Cannot do better than 25 points under no.
In this game environment, I do think that's not necessarily true. Russ always has a little bit of a running floor, and in this game, if Houston plays anything like they have been in the past 4-6 weeks. This should have been a game where Denver was forced to throw, and it was going to be one of Russ's highest volume spots of the season. So, and you have a pretty condensed target, like Cortland Sutton is his main guy. Judy is not stealing the volume from
the Sutton stuff is all like the most insane touchdown regression shit of all time, which is why I didn't want to play him.
Yeah. And the other thing is, and this is coming just knowing ball, like Russell Wilson isn't good.
Yeah.
He isn't good.
That's also ultimately where I landed is like, I'm a pretty agnostic. Like I'm willing to admit he was better than I thought he was 5 weeks ago, 10 weeks ago, the beginning of the season. But Russ is just bad. I mean,
if you look at his like underlying stuff, like his like EPA and stuff like that, like he's having a way better fantasy season than he's had in a couple years. But like, if you look at his underlying, like, are you actually good metrics? They're still bad. Like they haven't come up from the last couple of years. Whereas I'm not Purdy agnostic. Like I think Purdy is actually good. Yeah,
he's pretty not significantly better than Wilson. It's just this spot.
He's number one.
Was a better spot.
Purdy's number one in EPA.
Purdy's very good. Like, I don't think you can be a Purdy agnostic at this point. If you're a Purdy agnostic, you basically have to ignore statistics.
Bro, there is such debate on Twitter about Purdy being good or not,
and you have to ignore statistics at this point. I mean, he's you can't argue at this point that he is.
How could you?
That he is mediocre or less.
How could you? It's like his skills obviously don't jump off the screen, but the guy just makes the right decision consistently.
He's a point guard. He's Chris Paul.
Right. And that's fine. You know, we're in this age of like, oh yeah, we have these dual threat quarterbacks, these physical beasts and stuff like that. And those guys are awesome, right? But not everybody can be Josh Allen. We're not saying Purdy's Josh Allen. At its core, quarterbacking is about making correct decisions and delivering accurate passes. And Purdy does those things extremely well. And we're also anchored to the fact that this guy was like basically undrafted. He was the last pick in the NFL draft. And so it's like, oh yeah, he went to this team, you know, with this great offensive coordinator and these great weapons, and he doesn't have to do much. And it's like, you still have to make the right decision all the time, and you still have to deliver accurate passes. He does those things. Like,
yeah, volatility isn't always a good thing. And someone like a Josh Allen provides volatility and provides you outcomes in situations where the baseline, there isn't a positive expectation. So then he is able to create these opportunities or these plays where his EPA is crazy because it's like, oh, it's a very volatile play. But there's also Josh Allen plays that are massively negative because he's trying to produce these outcomes, where Brock Purdy's baseline, if he just operates at a mediocre medium baseline, because there's so many other targets in San Francisco that have positive expected outcomes, he doesn't need to be that volatile. If he was that volatile, it would actually be a negative to that team. If he played the way Josh Allen did, I think San Francisco would be a worse team.
I want to go back to the thing you said about the game environment, because I the game environment was better for Purdy. These are two teams with bad pass defenses and good run defenses. And I mean, Samuel backed me up on this one. Big game. I mean, a big game is more like a big game where the tensions are that high and these teams like really want to get one over on one another.
They're pulling it out. Yeah.
You're much more likely to see what happened, which is they're up 30 points in the fourth quarter and Purdy's still chucking, you know.
Yeah, Jalen Hurts is taken out of the game, taken to the locker room.
Yeah.
And then comes back out and it's like, why should he play? I think they were down like 3+ scores at that point. Jalen Hurts is coming back in. You know, he's coming back in the game. Like this is a game for the number one seed, and the number one seed is huge because it's the only one that gets a bye. And so your chances of winning the championship are significantly improved by winning the number one seed. It's like these teams are not giving it up. They're not pulling their guys. Like, they must win this game.
I don't disagree with that hypothesis, but the market clearly did. I mean, it was only a 47 game total. This was not what you would have expected from these two teams coming in. So there clearly was market pulling this overall offensive expectation of this game down. So like, you had to ignore the market to have that hypothesis. And I'm not saying that hypothesis was wrong, but I think going with market is going to be much better than not. I mean, this was
Tell that to Davis, where the market said San Francisco is favored in this game, and Davis is like,
yeah, I made my biggest side bet of the year on the Philadelphia Eagles. I think I got +129 on the money line. Big bet for me, and I would have sold my Eagles money line ticket for like $7 in the second quarter. I think, I mean, it was just very obvious it wasn't going
to
happen.
It worked out, but I'm just saying, going against market like long term, if we're trying to talk about like successful cash strategies over the long run, that's not going to work.
Yeah. Okay. Tournaments.
Wait.
Do we have anything else on cash?
We talk a little bit about wide receiver three? Because so Elijah Moore
versus Curtis Samuel versus Dortch versus Devontae Parker.
Yeah, I'd like to just touch on that, because, you know, I'm looking at the giant $25 and Elijah Moore was 35%. I don't know if you have the other guys, Davis, but
yeah, I do.
Okay.
Dortch was 13%, Devontae Parker was 10%. Curtis Samuel was actually the most owned of them, right about 30%. I got no issue with the no issue with the Curtis Samuel play. Like,
I have no issue with the Dortch play. If
Dortch, I got no issue with the Dortch play either.
Yeah, if Dortch and Elijah Moore were the same price, I couldn't find the $200, but I would have played Dortch.
I would. I also would have. Just being honest about it. That's my short king. I tried to make it work. I didn't like the sacrifices you needed to get there. But I do.
There were three bad punts though that people did play. A.T. Perry, Devontae Parker, and Jonathan Mingo, and all three of those I think are objectively bad.
No, Mingo, I thought was okay. If you guys want to really get inside the lab, the guy I had in my placeholder from when I made the team on Monday to when I woke up on Sunday morning and started looking at it was Tyquan Thornton. I was like jazzed to play Tyquan Thornton.
I think there was a tweet. I think you tweeted about Tyquan Thornton.
I did play him in one of my single entry teams. He did have a 39-yard rush. I also, just being fully transparent with my financial decisions, I also put Tyquan Thornton over 21.5 receiving yards in like every parlay that I did this weekend. And when I realized that his 39-yard play was a rush, I was so bummed out.
It's just so brutal. There it is. Well, Davis, he only came up 21.5 receiving yards short, so not bad. Devontae Parker, I mean, Parker ended up with 9 targets. So yeah. Nate, talk a little bit about why you think that was bad.
Yeah, that feels like a Nate play.
Yeah.
I mean, this
ugly volume, terrible game environment, but the Whopper, bro, the Whopper.
Yeah, this game environment, it was, I mean, what was the overall finish? 6-0? I mean, it was like, there was no way I could have played any offensive player in this game environment.
It was like the worst game of all time.
Yes. I mean, and it wasn't like, oh, wow, this outcome was totally unexpected. Like, no, like if you simulate outcomes for this game, this is not a bottom 2 percentile outcome. This is a maybe bottom 30% outcome, but like it was a team total of or a game total of less than 40. It was going down throughout the week. It was weather concerns. This was like the grossest pace, everything play on the slate. So like, I wouldn't have played a punt wide receiver from that spot. So
Davis, I need a ball take, which 30-year-old, former league winning fantasy player who got a high ankle sprain recently is more dust, Cooper Kupp or Austin Ekeler?
Oh, man. Ekeler is more dust because his entire career has been based on efficiency. Like Cooper Kupp, I think could kind of Michael Thomas his way to like a bunch of 6 for 60s in the fantasy playoffs, like to the point where like you can start him. But Ekeler, in this spot with like the way the Chargers are playing and like the lack of receiving threat outside of Keenan Allen, it just feels like the efficiency stuff is going to be real hard for him to do.
Well, I don't think his career has been defined so much as by straight up efficiency as it is fantasy efficiency, i.e. high value touches. Like he's never gotten massive volume, but catches and touchdowns, he just gets so many of. And like he is legit not getting it done on the ground anymore. But with only Keenan Allen as a legit pass catcher, like last year, they just threw him the ball a ton. And he was just racking it up. And yeah, that's not even happening this year.
Throwing it like he and Josh Kelly had the same amount of targets in this game.
Yeah, it's not great.
Yeah. All right. Let's go to tournament teams. I actually had a little bit of a sweat yesterday. I got to pull it up. It was not as much of a sweat as I thought, because it turns out when you just play the chalk, you actually end up being blocked by.
So Davis texts us, you know, 20 minutes before the end of the games. And he goes, guys, if Purdy and Debo both bonus and there's a touchdown, I might win the red zone. And then literally as the text comes through, slip screen to Debo, he rumbles for a 50-yard touchdown or whatever, Purdy bonus, Debo third touchdown, and Davis, and we're like texting frantically, and Davis goes, nope, never mind.
Never mind, totally blocked.
I really did not realize that 30% of entrants in these contests were playing Brock Purdy. Like, that's pretty nuts. But
that's the worst thing in the world. When you think you have like the nut outcome and then you look and it's like, wait, I didn't move.
Yeah.
Davis thought he was winning 50K and it goes like to $400.
Yeah, that it was one of those classic spots. So I played, these were my angles this week. The only two quarterbacks I played were Purdy and Howell. The only running backs I played were A-Chain, Moss, and Kyren Williams. I used Kyren and Flex in some teams. I played A-Chain on every team. He was 6% owned. He will never
that,
be
that usage was actually really interesting because I
he
think
was
you
the
talked
closer.
About this.
Yeah.
He closed.
That was weird.
Yeah. So give me a ball take. Is it like
they view Mostert as the more important one to protect for the playoffs?
Yeah.
That's clearly what it is. Is they
that,
view
that's
they view
what
Mostert,
I thought.
They view Mostert as the lead guy, and maybe it's like they know that A-Chain is like this really special player or whatever, but they just can't count on him because he's already been injured twice.
But it's still so strange that like coming off injury, they would. I mean, you look at the log, and it's like. Fourth quarter, it's like A-Chain for 6, A-Chain for 6, A-Chain for 2, A-Chain for 5, A-Chain for 13.
His
and it's
second
like,
touchdown was a fourth and goal to go. Like,
yeah.
they were just dicking around. Yeah.
And it's like, wait, what? Why are you doing this? This guy was just he just came off IR.
Like, that doesn't make me feel bad about playing him because I think that like all of that is encompassing, right? Like either role, the Mostert role for A-Chain or the A-Chain role that he had for him, either of those is fine as long as Jeff Wilson Jr. is not impeding, which he didn't.
Yeah,
he played,
but it should
snaps.
Affect the way that we view the A-Chain efficiency to realize that every touch that he gets is when the defense is not like where all of Mostert's work is like in situations where it's much tougher to gain those yards. So I do think like A-Chain's efficiency metrics do need to put in some context, but yeah, he's
sure. And I will say Mostert, for those who are like predicting his demise, the moment A-Chain came back, Mostert is now, I believe it's 6 touchdowns in 4 games that they played together. Like,
yeah,
he's going to be fine.
So this team was Purdy, A-Chain, Moss, Debo, Tyreek, Curtis Samuel, Brevin Jordan, Devonta Smith, and the real shit capper. I played the Saints defense instead of the Patriots defense here for the ownership discrepancy. Yep. And Saints defense generated 0 points in this game. So that's not great. This team is like a great example of, I looked at it this team this morning, actually had negative sim ROI, like negative like 50% or something sim ROI, but these sort of ownerships are what is happening with the sims in these contests, which is that the chalk is ending up getting way more owned than it used to. Like Tyreek in this spot at 9600 last year would have been 30%, not 55%, and Zach Moss would have been 65% instead of 80%, and Purdy would have been 10% instead of 30%, and Curtis Samuel would have been 12% instead of 30%. All that stuff is
basically the Sims have what the Sims have taught everybody is chalk is good. Eat more of it.
Yeah. It's like DFS has gone in a full circle from play the best plays to get leverage to play the best plays again.
Yeah. It's the bell curve meme. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The team that ended up winning actually was not dissimilar to mine, played a shit ton of chalk. It was Purdy, White, Moss, Tyreek. Michael Pittman Jr. was his, verge off the chalk or whatever at 7%. Had Curtis Samuel, had Brevin Jordan, had Debo Samuel, had the Falcons defense at 20% owned. Like,
I mean, that's like a cash team. That's incredible.
It's the cash team with no CMC, Pittman instead of the dusty 5K wide receiver that we played. Yeah, that's really all it is.
Insane.
Kind of incredible. Yeah.
Insane.
Kind of incredible. All right, Sammy, what do you got?
Yeah, I mean, the team that I played in the SPY was essentially kind of like this. It was kind of a cash game shell and just like a little bit reworked for tournaments. It was Purdy, McCaffrey, and Debo all together, bringing it back with AJ Brown. And then I played chalk with Zach Moss. I played Courtland Sutton. And Brevin
what
Jordan.
Sutton owned?
Sutton was 16.3.
Okay, actually less owned in tournaments than in cash. Yeah,
right.
Kind of interesting.
Crazy. So I played a little back to back game with Sutton and Brevin Jordan. Brevin Jordan 39% owned. Holy crap!
I think that's fine because you had to play Tyreek this week, and he was one of the easiest ways to do it. The only tight end who gave you the blade was Laporta.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And McBride too, I guess. McBride.
Yeah, I didn't play Tyreek in this lineup. I put AJ Brown in instead. For the for the correlation and the lulls and, you know, all that stuff. AJ Brown was 13%. So what are you going to do? And then where I got different in this lineup is I played at wide receiver three. I played Jameson Williams at 6.7%. One target, I think.
Yeah, but he scored a rushing touchdown.
Buddy, if you had tweeted a clip of that rushing touchdown in the preseason, like you did with Calvin Ridley, Jameson Williams would have been a third round pick. I mean, that dude looked like a flash. Like, you ain't seen speed like that since back in the day. Like, that was insane.
Yeah. He's got to get more touches. It's insane how much faster he is than everybody else on that field. It's
Jesus
insane.
Christ. Like, oh man. I mean, it's sort of an athlete.
It's kind of like the Marvin Mims type thing, where I just think clearly the coaching staff doesn't trust him as much as they trust Josh Reynolds. Like the Broncos coaching staff thinks.
Well, Mims didn't look physically like Williams did. Mims put up the numbers, but Williams literally looks.
Well,
like
Jameson playing. Williams is big. I mean, I think he's 6'1", 205 or whatever. Maybe he's 195.
Well, he was also, wasn't he like a top 10 pick?
Yeah.
They traded up for him. The Lions traded up for the right to select this guy who was like barely played in the NFL.
Yeah, I feel like he was like the ninth pick in the draft or something. Like, he was super hot.
I think the 12th pick.
Something like that. Yeah.
I mean, he was unbelievable at Alabama, like unreal good at Alabama. Yeah. So it's like not all that surprising. I just like there's this thing going around now the last couple weeks where people are talking about how bad ownership projections are. And here, let me see if I can pull up the tweet to find.
This is actually a good tweet. While you're pulling it up, I'll just say that I finished this lineup out with a $3,800 defense at 3.7% owned. The Steelers of Pittsburgh.
defense is worth a shit.
Yeah, not great. This team did score. I mean, less than cash, but it scored 160 and did cash in the spy. So.
Okay, so this is the tweet. At Sheets Pones, PWNS, has been tweeting these out. So it's really showing about how bad ownership projections have been, like specifically like the last month. I guess the Sims have just so entered the consciousness. But what's happening is the chalk is getting way more owned. So this is for the Millie Maker. Industry projected ownership, 28%. 44% draft in the Millie Maker. Zach Moss projected 49%, actual 65%. Curtis Samuel projected 9%, actual 23%. McCaffrey projected 24%. Actually only drafted on 14%, so it went the other way. People went away from McCaffrey. But the point is that the Sims, a huge part of what is going to give you the expected value, is going to be those ownership projections being accurate. And we are having a lot of the most important players on the slate, the highest projected players, being miscalculated on how many teams they are. And I'm wondering if now that'll lead into, let's say, ownership projections get better. I'm wondering if that'll lead the other way, where actually then the Sims will be saying, well, you can't be playing Tyreek if he's on 44% of your opponent's teams. And then the Sims are going to be giving you weirder teams. It's kind of this, it's this snake eating its tail sort of situation.
Right. It's a Nash equilibrium playing out in real time over multiple weeks.
Part of me enjoys that because we had so much talk early on in the season of like Sims destroying things. Now everybody jumps on it. Ownership starts to even out. And then it's like pivots the other way because like, that's why DFS is always going to still have an edge. It's just how quickly can you get on board and adapt and pivot. And, I told you guys last week, was it that team that I had that it was like, this is a clearly bad team now that Sims did like going into the week. But if your ownership projections are that off, you're going to be playing bad and losing money in GPP. So, I got bit by that. Was it 2 weeks ago with the Bills or last week with the Bills? So, it's a real thing and it will affect your ROI.
Yeah. But I think to your point, Nate, I think that's exactly right, where it's just going to be cyclical. Like that's just what it's going to be. And yeah, the people who are ahead of the cycle and understanding what the next step will be are the ones that are going to succeed.
So it's sim early in the season and then hand build from week 10 on.
Yeah. Pull down those tidy whities and sit down on the porcelain god, baby, and start entering lineups. Like, you are going to get rich. The phone shitter bros are going to have their day.
You know, I still don't think that is so much true. I still think it's going to be the Simbros. It'll just be the Simbros who get better at projecting ownership.
Well, I like the idea of winning $1 million on my toilet better, Davis.
I mean, obviously, like, yesterday was like an all-time just pick the right plays. Like, just click Purdy and Debo, Mike Evans, Trey McBride or Sam Laporta. You know, like, it was totally like just pick. It was not a game stack type situation. It was just click
for right sure. Guys. And I mean, man, I mean, is there any better microcosm than seeing Debo Samuel 30% owned in tournaments?
No, that's when you know DFS is like a tough game to win at, is that when this guy who can like get 4 or 37 on any given slate ends up being like giga chalk. Like, that is when you're just like, well, fuck. Yeah. Like, what do you even do?
Yeah.
Yeah. He got 7 touches and had the receiving bonus and 3 touchdowns.
That's unreal.
My other team, my red zone team, was also a Purdy stack, but I stacked with Ayuk because I just thought Ayuk would actually be the under-owned guy. And when he caught the first touchdown, I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be rich. And then Debo took back over.
Yes, correct. All right. That should wrap us up here today. Everyone, thanks for listening. Continue to send games to Davis Matic, Whirling Dervish, and I guess if you DM Nate,
there's two things you can DM me or add me as a friend, and then I come up in your thing every week, and you can just
yeah.
So, you want to be friends with Nate, and also personal apologies. Some people I missed their invites, this and that. I was out of the country for a little more than a week, so I couldn't enter some games. So if I missed your invite, my apologies, but I'm back stateside, so.
And if I don't accept your game moving forward, it means that I think you're better than me. So no hard feelings. But if you're sending me 2 15s and your teams are good, I'm probably not going to accept them. You know, all is fair in love and war. See y'all next week.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.